Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin.
And we're your hosts.
Love is love.
How do I get the sperm through custom?
I am a lesbian.
So gay.
We need to tell our story.
It's not your nuclear family anymore. It's not just your mom and dad thing.
We're not ruining these little humans.
Not for the gay reason. Just because we stick.
Hi.
Hi there.
How are you, Jamie?
I'm fine. How are you, Robin?
I'm in a mood, Jamie.
Yes. Yes, it's true. For our listeners out there, welcome. We're happy to have you. Mm-hmm. And we just had a little moment. Like, as you know, during this pandemic time, things can get emotional right now. We're all caved inside our homes and dealing with our families 24/7 and trying to work and trying to deal with kids. And sometimes we get emotional, right, Robin?
Yes, that's true.
And I have to say, like, every time we've recorded in our social distance time, one of us, and probably it's usually me, comes to the recording with like a little emotional baggage that I have to work through at the beginning of it. And Robin does a good job of getting me out of it for the most part. And this time Robin came with some emotional baggage. I didn't do that great a job of getting her out of it. So, you know, like, we're all doing our best, guys. And we just want to say that, and just everybody's getting emotional right now. Everybody's having their own.
It's just all the same. It's all the same fucking day over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And like, if I go to the museum parking lot with my kids and their scooters one more day and then have yet another fight about the schedule and the, you never said that. It's like the fucking schedule's on the wall. I said it. It's a lot.
I agree. I know. And for me, it's like my daughter's having a really emotional time and she's just having like crazy meltdowns. We talked to the school therapist today.
Yeah.
And we're going to get some help because she's having a tough time. And she keeps asking, if she asks me one more time, when are we moving to the new house? When are we going to move to the
never!
New house?
Oh, we're my never! God.
I don't have an answer, Rose. I don't have an answer. We're trying to do, and then we're trying to work and emails keep coming in and texts keep coming in and everybody needs something from you right now.
Yeah. And then I'm just like moving from room to room to room. Like, set up in one room and then four kids come in and then I go get set up in another room and then I'm like, fuck, I don't have this what I need and then I got to go get this. And it's like, you can't get anything done.
No, it's hard. Yeah. It's really hard to get stuff done. And there are good days and bad days. And, you know, a lot of us are all going through the same thing. But I do have to say, just to keep it in perspective, we're all well. We're all alive.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to throw that out there so that people at home aren't like all these selfish bitches with their ovaries.
No, I know, but it's like if you think like that, and I'm not saying your thinking is bad or wrong. I'm just saying, but if you think like that, then there's always somebody who could have it worse than you. You have to allow yourself the space to be like, this sucks for me right now. Because it's like, if you, yeah, sure, somebody's working in a hospital right now and somebody's like isolating from their family and somebody lost a loved one. And that is always worse. And that is horrible. And you know, we are all feeling for them. But it's like, at the same time, you have to respect whatever you're going through too, because it doesn't mean it's not hard.
True. And we're all going through stuff.
Yeah.
So we would like, our ovaries would like to acknowledge your stuff, whatever it is. We're here for you. I mean, I don't know how here for you we can be, but
we'll keep putting up this dumbass podcast for you.
Yeah. We're going to,
except for the month of August.
And, you know, hang in there, guys. We're going to get through this someday.
And we've got something we're going to do today about listener questions to get our mind off all the junk. But before we do that, we have a new partnership that we want to be really transparent about, but with Mira Fertility. Tell us about Mira Fertility.
Mira Fertility, Robin, thanks for asking. It's really cool.
You're welcome, Jamie.
It's basically it's a fertility
tracking. It's really cool.
It's a fertility tracking app and device. So you can get pregnant faster through accurate and very personalized fertility tracking. So this app and device gets to know your own personal cycle. And that's why we think it's so special.
Yeah, yeah. And so if you go to our website, ovariestalk.com, you're going to see that there's an offer. If you get their starter kit, you're going to get $25 off it when you use the code OCT. So go check it out. It's like, this is ongoing. It's up there. So, you know, should you need it, it's there for you.
Check it
just
out.
Just like we're there for you.
Check it. It's one thing you can do if everything is halted in your life right now in regards to your fertility. That's one thing you can actually do. You can track it. Why not? Just track it.
Well, and at-home insemination is still safe from what Dr. Mark told us on our live stream.
It's true. It's just, I also realized, like, for somebody that, like me, who went through infertility and who really needed the doctors, that might suck for you, too. Yeah. We get that. We get it. So, you know, hang in there. Once again, hang in there.
It's all we can do, like the kitten and the poster. Well, let's get to our show. Today, we're getting a bunch of listener questions, and we wanted to just, like, roll through them and answer some questions and be with you in that way.
Yeah, and we've got some good ones.
We do.
Robin wrote down, we've got some doozies, but I'm not saying doozies. I'm not doing that.
You don't have to say doozies.
I don't know why I wrote questions. That.
They are doozies.
Doozies. Now I'm never going to stop.
Take doozies out of the script.
Helen, why was doozies allowed to stay in the script?
Can you believe our fake producer, our imagined producer wrote doozies?
Oh man, she's got one of those chains with the glasses around her neck.
It's because she's 75, you know what I mean? Like, this is her retirement job.
Yeah, she's smoking in the corner, playing solitaire.
She was waving to people at Walmart. We were like, do you want to be our producer? And now Helen works with us.
She's not real, guys. I think they know that, but I know. We don't have an old lady in the corner.
Why did she have to be in the corner? I didn't put her in the corner. All right, let's get to our first
question.
Nobody
puts Helen in a corner.
Okay, our first question is from Angela Cause.
Hi, fellow lesbian mamas. I have a question for you. What was your first vacation like with your kids? Did it go as planned, or was it a complete disaster?
What a question.
I mean, mine are a little bit like blended together. Like, I remember my first vacation with two kids, and I think I've talked about this. That was one where I was flying with Henry, and the two like ladies across the aisle were like, give me that baby. And because he wouldn't stop crying. And I literally handed him across the aisle to two strangers. And then they just handed him back because he wouldn't stop crying. And after in this, what's that line? Customs line. Mm-hmm. Some lady was just staring at me and she's like, you have Cheerios all over your chest. And I was just like, no, I know. Because that's how it went.
Flying with babies is, oh my God, it's so hard. But I guess they all blend together for me, too. I think I remember our very first plane ride with Rose when she was a baby. So our first kid. And we fly cross country. We fly to San Francisco anytime we fly because I have to go visit my family at home. So it's a 7-hour flight, you know. So
that's a flight. That's a long flight with a kid.
And Rose was an explosive baby, to put it mildly. And she definitely had at least one of her screaming, raging fits that lasted a very long time.
Oh, it was so embarrassing on the plane.
Oh, it was hard. It was so hard. And that was my first kid too. So I wasn't as good at like letting it roll off my shoulder and say, fuck you to the people staring at me in my brain. You know, I was feeling really bad. Like I was making everybody's life miserable and they thought I was a bad mom. So yeah, my first trip with the baby was tough on the plane.
The first road trip that we did with Maxine, we were going to Maryland and we stopped along the way to like change a diaper, like do something. And we got back in and we were like so proud of ourselves, like changed a diaper on the road. And we were like, look at us go. And we pull in the driveway in Maryland and we realized that when we got back into the car, we hadn't hooked the car seat back in because, you know, we didn't have our own car at the time. So it was a rental. So we had never hooked it back in. And we were like, oh my God, she is like a projectile baby. And then on the same trip, we had added more formula, like she had gone up and I had, you know, those little dividers that you put the formula in for the day. Like I had put the new amount in and Mary thought that I didn't put the new amount in. So she put more in and we were putting the same amount of water in. So our daughter had like just explosive diarrhea and gas and would just be like across the room farting because we like just gave her like triple the amount of formula.
Oh,
so
man.
I mean, we just felt like such failures that entire trip.
You always feel like a failure when you're on a plane, you just feel like a failure as a mom, unless there's a miraculous one. And I definitely, Anne and I definitely did that whole forget to put the car seat in the actual car. We've done that too one time and we realized it like on the freeway.
Oh my God. I just, the guilt I felt was just like, what if? But on this other trip where we took Maxine to Puerto Rico and on that trip in the airport, I had a portable stroller and then I had like the car seat stroller and my portable stroller, the wheel got hooked under the wheel of the other stroller and it created a fulcrum. And then the baby started like shooting out. And then I dove and you just heard everyone in the waiting area go, because it looked like the baby was going to go flying. But I caught her. And then Mary took her into the bathroom and she wasn't buckled into the car seat thing. And she fell out of the thing. And then she fell off a bed. And then we took her bathing suit and zipped it up really fast and zipped her chest into it.
I don't think it was fun for her.
We nearly broke her on that trip. But she's like 11 now and really good. So, Angela, everything works out.
Everything works out.
It's we just told her all the horror stories.
Just know that it's going to be, the travel part of it is just going to be stressful.
It's not going to be fun.
Is.
No.
Because you have so many things you have so many things to remember. You have so many things to bring on the plane
and
or
you forget
in the car.
Something. But my sister told me one travel trick. She said, when you put all the stuff in your bag, don't take it all out at once. No. Like, because then they'll have burned through everything. So like, you just keep taking them out one thing at a time, like, ooh, here's a rattle. And then, ooh, here's this. So that way, or here's crackers. That way that you can keep trying to like get through the ride.
Also, buy one new surprise toy for the plane. For the when you know they're about to lose it, or it's coming, or they're getting bored, pull that puppy out, because you're going to get another good 10 minutes probably.
Yeah. And if you think you need 5 pounds of snacks, pack 10,
because
half of them are going on the floor.
Yeah.
Or on your chest, as that lady told me.
And if your kids are crazy milk drinkers, like my kids drink milk, like I can't believe how much milk they go through. It's a problem.
Oh my God.
We're trying to break them of this problem.
That'll pass. That'll start to pass.
But Rose is 6. And just know, they won't give you milk. They will give you a teeny tiny cup of milk on the plane. You need to bring your milk on that plane. You need to buy the milk.
Bring everything.
At the Starbucks out in the... At the gate, get a bunch of milk if you're like,
just bring a cup and pour it in at the Starbucks.
Yeah. Yeah. So just telling you.
Trina Tucker.
That's a cool name.
It is a cool name.
Trina Tucker.
She sounds like a badass.
She sure does. All right. Let's hear what Trina Tucker's question is.
What's your advice for handling all those fertility clinic appointments during the workday? I'm worried about disclosing to my boss that we're trying to conceive, but I don't see any way around it.
Trina. Mm. From someone who went through 2.5 years of these appointments, I agree. It's really hard to not tell your boss and your coworkers that you're doing it, because after a certain amount of time, they're going to get pissed off at you that you keep cutting out at work to go do these things. And I was lucky I had a job that isn't a 9-to-5 job, so I could figure it out. But there were days I still had to miss work. And I told everybody in the end.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard not to.
I had told everyone, but in my clinic, all the hours were between 6 and 8 a.m. And it was like first come, like you needed to report back on day 3 or whatever. But for all those, like you could just come whenever you wanted to. And so for me, I was the first one there. Like I was there at 6 a.m. I was there and then I would be out quickly. And I think that's preparation for parenting. You know, you're going to be up early. So that's, if you can do that. Do that.
Anne did a lot of that when she was getting pregnant. She did a lot of the early morning appointments. I couldn't do that because she left for work earlier and I had to stay home with the kid.
Oh, you had a second kid at that point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, it's less about telling because you've already had the one baby. Like the second kid, nobody gives a crap what you do. Like everyone's like, oh, you're having another baby? Big deal.
Well, I didn't want to tell anybody because people ask you, and if it's not working out, then you actually have to like tell them how much you're failing every single month, and that's not fun either. And I wanted to keep it a secret. I'm private. It's not anybody else's business.
Mm.
But I did learn.
That's interesting.
I'm not into it. Like, you don't need to know that I'm going and getting inseminated every month. It's none of your business. I'm private about it.
So funny, because I was the exact opposite. Everyone, everything I was doing, I was like, day 3. Like,
yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. For me, it was very, like, it was a very internal thing. And I did have to tell because I'm a dance teacher and I couldn't move as much and I had to be careful.
Yeah.
Because my ovaries were all swollen and they could explode and, you know.
That would
stink. Yeah, did you know that? So, yeah, it's hard not to tell people.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Okay, Lisa Zayas.
Hi, this is Lisa. I'm curious to know, what would you do if you had leftover embryos that are full genetic siblings to your children that were not PGS tested, and yet you're done having children? Would you donate them to science, have them destroyed, or give them up for adoption? Thanks.
Holy cow. I have never thought about that.
Well, I will say, this is not the same at all, but we had leftover sperm. that we could have donated or terminated.
You couldn't sell it back?
No, because once it leaves their storage.
Oh, it had left the clinic. Okay.
It was at our doctor's storage. And that was a really hard decision because, well, I didn't want to get rid of it.
What'd you do?
I think we donated it.
Huh. I think it's I'd feel weird donating to science because I feel like there'd be some weird, like, testing they'd be doing. And that's probably just naive or whatever. I think I'd feel bad about that. And I would have a very hard time destroying them. I might give them up for adoption.
Would you?
God, I don't know. This is a really hard question.
It's hard.
I'd probably keep them as long as possible in storage. And then
I'd probably do that too. I think that I would be more likely, though, to donating them to science than having them destroyed.
Are you afraid there'd be some weird testing?
No, I'm not worried about that. I am more worried about having my babies out in the world. And that's selfish.
No, I know. This is like a very hard question.
Deep. Lisa, why are you so
I wonder
so
if
deep?
Lisa's in the middle of this decision. If you are, Lisa, let's come on our podcast or the live stream and tell us about it. Because
I'm sure there've got to be a lot of people grappling with this, honestly.
Yeah, we need somebody to reach out to us who's in the situation because I need to hear more about this.
That's a tough decision. Yeah, I think I would donate them to science because I don't feel like they don't have feelings yet in my head, in my opinion. So I wouldn't mind donating them to science and then maybe they can learn more about them for the fertility process going forward.
I just watched too much Orphan Black.
I don't know that show. Oh. I don't think I should watch it. I'm not watching that.
That's not my kind
of show. I'm not going to watch that. No.
She's such a phenomenal actress. Okay. All right. Lisa's also got another question. Are there any life changes that you plan on making once this pandemic passes?
Good question.
I'll tell you what, I'm getting a highlight ASAP.
Well,
my grays are just starting to come in for the first time, and that's the timing of this is not good.
Is that a life change?
Feels like a life change.
You know what? You know what is one thing that I've been grappling with a lot? Because we're in this house in the suburbs for this social distanced time, we have really started thinking about
The burbs.
And how important it is to actually really live in the city. And would we be able to do this? And we're really
like, how far out in the burbs would you go? Are you talking like Maplewood, New Jersey kind of burbs? Or are you talking
Westchester,
Long Island-y?
Maybe. I don't know.
Wow.
Because seeing the kids be able to just go outside and ride bikes and we don't have that. You don't have that in the city. I think about Rose could literally, there's a little kid right down the street, same age. Rose could just get on her bike, go meet her little friend. They could go to each other's houses. Like, we wouldn't even have to be involved.
Whenever we go over to my friend Dave's house, they have like a big house in Pennsylvania. His son Tyler is just running to the neighbor's house and then the neighborhood and they comes over and then they're just like, that's how I grew up.
But I didn't have that. I didn't have anything like that.
I grew up upstate. So I grew up in the middle of nowhere. I would just take off and my mom would stand on the porch and scream and eventually I would come home.
No, see, I didn't have anything close to that. I was always in a city. So I always thought I would hate this kind of life, but now I'm looking at it and this little town is so idyllic and pretty.
Oh, it really is.
It's too idyllic.
I could see that though. I could really see that, you know, if we got to a place where our job, like I could do my job from anywhere, I think I would do the burbs a little bit.
Well, I think this is showing us that we kind of can.
Yeah, maybe we can. Yeah, right? We're doing it right now.
I'm moving to LA. I'm just kidding. I'm
trying to think if I life changes. Like I think that there's like, these aren't quite as big as like your life decision, but like, you know, it always seemed like a pain in the butt to sit down and all eat dinner together at the table a lot every night. And we're doing that now. It was all a pain in the butt for us all to like go take walks together. And we do that every single day now. And it's like, I think I would like to, like, I was looking at my kid, even though he's driving me crazy yesterday, but I thought, oh my God, I'm going to miss you guys when this is over. I'm like, as much as I want to be alone, we're spending so much time together. I'm going to miss them. And it's like, I think I want to find ways to keep some of what nice things that have come.
Yeah, that's true. I'm on the same page as you. As much as they're driving me crazy, there is, you know, like a couple weeks ago, I said that getting out of bed was like so scary because I just didn't want to go see my kids. Like, I was like, oh God, it's like my bosses. That's subsided now. And I'm actually excited to go downstairs and see them and just kind of have our morning together.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it's just like we're this little unit right now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like it feels, I said to Mary, and I think you and I talked about this too. It almost feels like in some ways, like Little House of the Prairie days. Like, we're all together. We're not going anywhere. Like, you have to cook everything. You can't go out to dinner. You just, everything mm-hmm. feels very insular and very, the way I imagine Little House on the Prairie to be.
Ooh, except for, like, cow. You know. I gotta go milk the cow. There's no cows.
Come here, but half pint.
It also is bringing up all of our shortcomings as homemakers, too. Like, oh my cooking is not up to par. It is not up to par, you know, yeah. and, like, all those things. So, it's been interesting. Wow, Lisa's really making us dig deep. Let's hear Lisa's last question.
She's got a fun one in the last one.
She says, I've heard you mention Henrietta's on the show, and I'm curious about any other stomping grounds you may have had. I used to love Gloss Night at Meow Mix, and don't know of anyone else that remembers it. Makes me sad. I get that, Lisa. Henrietta's, for those of you who don't know, Henrietta Hudson's is a lesbian Thanks. Bar that used to still be open before this pandemic. I don't know what's going to happen. That would be so sad if they Henrietta
make it.
Closed.
I heard that Ginger's might not make it. I just saw an article that Ginger's is like the only surviving lesbian bar in Brooklyn, and it might not yeah. make it.
Ginger's was cool. I went to Ginger's like 2 times. I yeah. never... So I think I'm going to answer quickly, and then Robin probably has more because she went out more than me. Because when I became a lesbian, I came out with my girlfriend, and then we like holed up in our apartment for the next 7 years together. We rarely went out unless we went to Henrietta's like once every 8 months. So I don't have that big of a lesbian nightlife memory type, but Robin has a lot. So go ahead, Robin.
Yeah, I was single a lot longer than Jamie. Go figure. When I first came to the city, we used to hang out at Crazy Nanny's. And I remember watching the Ellen episode where she, the first kiss upstairs at Crazy Nanny's. And we were all like, it was like crowds of lesbians and we were high-fiving. And then so we moved to Henrietta's, which we called Hank's. And we spent a lot of time there playing pool. But the other mm-hmm. place that I spent as I got a little bit older was the Cubby Hole was my place. But we did also used to do those, like there used to be that, like those parties that were like rotating. Like there was one that was called the Click Club. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone. And that was like on Saturday night dance party. And then there was all those like there was this other one that I can't think of the name of. It was like a girl on girl kind of like. And they would have like, you know, go-go dancers. And it was we used to go to those sometimes. And we also used to go to like this gay man's bar called Uncle Charlie's. And then there was another one that we went to in Chelsea.
Uncle Charlie's.
That you would just go to dance. And nobody cared if you were there. And there was just like hot guys, which were just like, well, that's pretty. And gay. Then you would just dance and they didn't care what you did or even if you were there. So but, that like that was my.
But did you ever go to Gloss Night at Meow Mix?
I did. I used to go to Meow Mix sometimes, but not very often. I felt like a not cool girl at Meow Mix. Like Meow Mix was very like the like East Village-y cool girl lesbians. And like I always felt like I'm just in my Gap t-shirt. And I was just like, I sort of play some sports. I was like, this is not, I'm not fitting in here.
I honestly never felt like I fit in at lesbian bars either because I thought they all thought I was just this straight girl imposter. Because I didn't look gay.
You really had like, you really had some kind of a thing with that.
I was afraid that people were going to think I was an imposter. Like they didn't believe I was gay. I don't know.
Why would anyone think that? If you're in a lesbian bar, I would think you were a lesbian.
Would you?
Yeah.
Really? I just assume people would be like, what? Who's this Polly Pocket coming in here being all straight? That's how I perceive myself.
Oh my God. Meanwhile, everybody was just drunk. It's like, you know, nobody ever gave it a thought.
Nobody cared. But
oh
anyway.
My God. Those were good times though. I remember like there used to be, what was the one that was, it was like up the road from Hank's and it was Ruby Fruit Jungle or whatever that was.
Ruby Fruit Jungle. Ruby.
Yeah. There was that place.
Ruby Fruit.
Yeah. Ruby Fruit. Based on the book, Ruby Fruit Jungle. Something
yes.
like that. Yes. And we used to go there occasionally, but there was this like kind of like 90s working girl, like Upper East Side lesbian bar. It was like Ellen's or something like that. And it was just like all like working women in shoulder pads. It was like 80s, 90s.
Weird.
It was like the 90s, but they were dressing like it was the 80s. It was amazing. There was just used to be all kinds of fun bars.
I know. I wonder what they do now, the youngins.
I think it's just no my young millennials that I knew from my old job, it was just not a thing for them. Like we needed to go there to find our people and they don't need to do that anymore. So
right.
I think that it's inevitable that this is happening because it's like they just go hang out with their friends.
Yeah, things change.
I mean,
things
change. It goes by, I think about the Richie Jackson episode, like how adamant he was that that's bad and people need to know their history. But I also feel like that's, I guess, what we fought for. So. I don't know.
Well, he was also so adamant about being in this community and feeling the camaraderie of the community in these places that were just for us. And yes, he thought that that was really important and he didn't want to lose
And it
that.
Was back then. And now we have like gay cruises and, you know, it's like more like that.
You have gay cruises.
Nobody's got a gay cruise anymore.
Nobody's going on any cruises for a while.
No, I don't think so. I feel the poor cruise industry. It's over.
Yeah. Yeah. This is Rebecca Arcus.
What are both your views on not telling about pregnancy until 12 weeks? We've told earlier than we planned both times, as I think going through the fertility treatment process means it feels like forever to wait once you're finally pregnant.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. We sort of touched on that a little bit earlier.
Yeah, but I think Robin and I's answers are going to be completely opposite.
Of course.
I'm the more private one. I didn't want to tell anybody. We didn't tell anybody until 12 weeks. And part of that was because a miscarriage could happen and we knew that. And we didn't want to have to explain to everybody that we had miscarried, because that's like hashing it up again and it's painful. But also it comes down to, I'm private. It's none of your business. I want to keep this to myself.
Yeah, I was telling everybody as soon as I got pregnant. It was like, you know. But it's also, you know, I did have a miscarriage. And what I found very surprising was the exact opposite thing happened. It didn't feel rehashed. I felt supported. There was this, in a weird little story, the day that I got pregnant that time, I was in the waiting room of the fertility clinic. And I look over and a coworker was there. And literally a woman who sits down the hall from me. And she was not a lesbian. She was a straight woman, but she had cystic fibrosis. And so I think they had to do IVF for some reason. And we both got pregnant on the same day. And, you know, she had had two lung transplants. Like, I mean, she had gone through it. And I really felt like we had this connection. And when I started spotting, and the doctor at first was like, don't worry about it. It's no big deal. And then they call me back like an hour later, because we had been in that day. We had heard the heartbeat, and they were like, no, it's actually, the doctor said you were going to miscarry. Your numbers are not doubling or, you know, going up the way they should. And that woman from down the hall, and I'm not particularly religious, but I was so touched by this. She came down and she said, I don't know what the right thing to do is, but I brought you these rosary beads. And I was so moved by it. And I had this feeling like, if it has to be one of the two of us, it should be her. Like, she's had such a struggle and she's paying for IVF. And I felt connected to her. And all these people came out of the woodwork telling me about their miscarriages. And it made me feel like, oh, it's so much more common than people realize. And I didn't want to go through it alone. And I felt very supported. So I don't know.
Interesting.
It worked for me. But again, it's very individual.
Yeah, because I think it has to do with how you process your emotions. And some people want to feel a part of a group and feel supported. And then there's people like me who don't want anybody talking to her about them. Because there was this other couple that we were close with. She was having a really hard time getting pregnant. And we would always see each other in the waiting room. Not good friends, but like acquaintance friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I always saw her in the waiting room. And we'd talk and, you two again, you know, we do that. But she reached out to me via email and was like, let's connect, let's talk. And I wanted none of that. I was like, it was sweet of her and I really wanted to for her sake, but it's just not in my nature.
Yeah.
I have to process it by myself. I can't share this with anybody else. It's mine, you know? Yeah. So it's just, I think it depends on how you process it.
And I think whatever you do is right. Yeah. That's the beauty of it. It's like, you don't have to feel, I think there are plenty of creative ways to hide things. And I think you just have to trust your gut on whether or not, you know, think about if the worst thing happens, can you handle people knowing?
Yeah.
And would that be helpful to you?
Yeah. I would agree too, though, with Rebecca, that it is so hard to not tell people once you do get pregnant, though. It really is really hard.
It really is. Because you have this humongous life event.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And then you're feeling sick. And then you're still not telling people. And then your coworkers think you're an asshole because you're...
I never could have made it to 12 weeks. It was like, no way.
Like, I did. No way. I made it to 12 weeks.
Crazy.
With
everyone,
except
crazy.
My mom, you know.
Okay. Melissa D., one of our favorite... I don't want to say favorite listener because I don't want to like make anyone feel bad, but she's always on our live streams and she always has good, thoughtful questions.
Hi, my name's Melissa and my questions are, how did your parents and siblings, if applicable, react when you informed them about your pregnancies? And how has your relationship with your parents and siblings changed since the birth of your children? Thanks.
So my mom and dad, my parents were excited. My brother was excited. It was pretty chill. I don't remember us having any weird, deep conversations about it. I think they were just excited. There was no baggage around the gay baby thing. But my in-laws, it took them a little while to wrap their heads around it. And I think they were a little honestly weirded out at first that Anne came home and said, I'm pregnant. And they were like, well, they didn't want that. You know, they're not going to ask how it happened. They won't do that because they're Catholic private folks.
Do they know now? Have you ever told them how?
Sometimes, like little things, we tell them the donor, you know, we don't say sperm. It's sensitive, right?
Yeah.
So there wasn't much talk about it, but it was definitely an awkward subject. And while her belly grew, it was definitely a little bit like, oh God, how's, you know. But once our daughter, our first, was born, it softened them. Yeah. Like, they love her. They love her so much.
Once and the baby gets there, I think it always gets better.
Yeah, I feel like it changed my relationship with them because they really did recognize me then as really somebody who's sticking around, who's in this life for good, even though we got married. Like, they really did see me as a part of this family, and they saw me as the other mom. There was no weirdness, and I was worried there might be weirdness about me also being mom. But no, they embraced it. They are totally on board, and I've gotten closer to them because of the babies.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is that my mom had died just as I was meeting Mary, so she never got to meet Mary or anything like that, which is sort of a bummer. Mm-hmm. But my dad was always the one who was like, he was a little bit like, I was kind of like, all right, you might be a little bit racist. You might be like, I'm not sure how this is going to go. He was like a good man, but you know, he had his limitations.
Didn't say the right things.
Yeah. What was weird is when I told him that we were going to start trying, it was his, I can't remember which birthday. It was some like birthday party. So it was this big party that we had flown in for, and he walked around the party and was telling everyone he was going to be a grandpa. We hadn't even started trying yet. And so we're at this party with all these strangers in the middle of North Carolina. So you're in like a red state, and everyone's coming up and being like, I hear you guys are going to have a baby. And Mary and I were just like, oh my God. I was like, and it was so surprising, like how open he was and how excited he was about it, which was like a really nice surprise. I mean, my sister was always supportive, so that was just totally fine and normal. On Mary's side of things, Mary had never told her dad she was gay, and he was at the time almost 90, like 89, 88, something like that. And so we were getting ready to go back to her house for Christmas, and I said, Mary, I was like 6 months pregnant. I said, you got to tell him I'm having a baby. I was like, there has to be a line here. I was like, I'd been going home to her house for Christmas for like 4 years and pretending I was just her friend and had nowhere to go. So I was like, I can't just pretend I'm fat. Like, we have to tell him like this is it. And it didn't go well. But it wasn't that he was mad. He just kind of said, I wish you hadn't told me. Oh. And then we didn't see him for 6 years. And it was just, he's an old man from like West Virginia, like who was nearing 90, and he needed help. And I think Mary couldn't help him. And eventually Mary's sister brokered like a ceasefire. And now it's like, he loves those kids. And like, we go every Christmas, and we go a couple, 2-3 times a year. And, you know, and they call him Pap, and he loves them. And he gave us some gift, and he said, this is for your whole family. And it was like addressed to me. And that was like last Christmas, the one before. And I was so moved by it, because it was like he acknowledged our family. And the dude is literally 98 now. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's
sometimes
tough,
they just need help, I think.
Mm-hmm. And the kids help.
Oh my God. So much
with the acceptance. So much.
We got one more question. We're opening up to our group of people.
Yes, because we actually don't have an answer for this, but it's such a cool idea and question that we thought we would share it with you guys, and maybe you have an answer or know of something that is out there that they're asking
for. And if you do, you can email us at ovariestalk@gmail.com, and we can throw it in the top of the next episode.
Hey, ladies, this is Eric. My husband's name is Justin, and we were wondering if you or your listeners know of a communal online group to share adoption books between parents who may not need them anymore. We would love any and all books and feel perhaps there are some books collecting dust out there that people wouldn't mind donating to others.
Okay, so that's a really cool idea.
Totally.
I wonder if anybody has done it. If nobody has done it and nobody knows of it, I think somebody needs to start it, because I think that could really be helpful for so many couples who have to make these books, because I've heard it's the most stressful thing in the world.
But I do actually have a question about that question. Maybe I'm just like missing something, or I'm dumb. And there's no need to answer that.
Like, I didn't say anything.
Is he looking for inspiration from the books if it's donated? Because it's going to have other people's pictures in it.
He's looking for, like, if you're not using your book anymore and you already have your kids, would you mind sharing the book you put together for inspiration? So we can see how you put it together, what works.
I was kind of like, is he wanting to like take their pictures out and pop his in, or is he just looking for inspiration?
Inspiration, like, you know,
like a Facebook group where you take pictures of your book and they could be up, and then you could see people's stuff that way.
I don't know. Maybe there is. That's what we need our listeners to tell us. Help a couple out who's starting the adoption process. Let's see if we get any answers.
Well, this was fun. I loved all these questions from everybody. They were good questions.
They're better questions than we ask. So thanks, guys.
It is true. It is true. That's not hard, though.
Not really. But this has been really fun.
This has been great. And we're getting close to Pride. That's going to be coming up. It's like in a couple of weeks. And we've got some big episodes coming up for Pride. We've got Sam Bettens, who's the lead singer of K's Choice, and this other band called Rex Rebel. Mm-hmm. So excited to talk to him. Pride's going to be good stuff.
I'm excited. However it pans out.
Yeah, that's true. Our virtual Pride. We should say, for Pride, everybody should send us videos of themselves celebrating, of their families, how they're going to celebrate Pride. And we'll share them on our social media throughout the month of June.
Yeah, you'll get a little highlight in our social media.
Yeah.
A moment, a Pride moment. Maybe we'll start hashtag Pride moment.
Hashtag virtual Pride. I think that one probably already exists.
That's probably going to be taken up big time, but it'll get a lot of hits. We have to find the hashtag. Let us know, guys. What do you think?
Well, thank you so much. This was very fun. And should we keep the conversation going, Jamie? Where should they find us?
Yeah, we should. They should go to ovaries_talk on Instagram, ovariestalk on Twitter, If These Ovaries Could Talk on Facebook, and you can join our private community there, which is always fun. And you can get us on patreon.com/ovariestalk. Am I wrong? Am I right?
No, you're right. For bonus content there.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah.
And you can also find us now on YouTube at, what is it, Robin?
Oh, that one's like, it's like XYBT92. You just have to search If These Ovaries Could Talk YouTube.
Search If These.
We need 100 whole followers before they let us get Ovaries Talk on YouTube.
We also need more followers so I can finally get that check mark.
Oh, I know. I want a check mark. All right. Well,
so guys, tell your friends to follow us so we can get a check mark.
All right. Well, hang in, everybody out there. I feel like we need an It Gets Better for coronavirus. It gets better. We hope it gets better.
We're going to get through this. You know, we're going to get through this together. We're going to come out strong. We're going to come to the new normal and be happy about it. We're going to get there.
We're going to have clean, clear eggs, strong eggs.
Your environment affects your eggs. It's true. So you might come out of here like the most fertile thing ever and just get pregnant like that.
All right.
Helen's telling us to wrap up because we're just rambling.
Eggs, ovaries, strong eggs out.
Out!
If these ovaries could talk, they would say, eggs, ovaries out.